Welcome to Rule Breakers for Gender Equality. My name is Nancy Polian, and I'm on a mission to make the top of the business world more diverse and inclusive. Because to me, rule breaking is all about taking a risk. The risk to be yourself and to create your own career path. In 2021, there were more CEOs named Peter than women CEOs in the Netherlands. This is one of the rules that I want to break. Let's see which business leader is breaking the rules today. Okay, so I'm here today with Dan Dorner, who's got quite a reputation because I've been speaking to a couple of people at ABN AMRO, and whenever I ask them to name an inspiring leader, your name is being mentioned. So, Dan, what do you think about that?
That feels like the whole world on my shoulders.
It's a lot of pressure, right? It's a lot of pressure for this conversation. But you're a member of the executive board here at ABN AMRO, which is quite a high role to have, a high function. And that's a lot of weight on your shoulders as well.
That's a great responsibility.
Yeah.
And it's also, in the same time, a unique opportunity to make a difference with the colleagues around me.
So you can look at it like a great challenge.
Yes.
Just like it being an inspiring leader.
Indeed. I think my role is a platform, but also leadership is a platform in a way.
Yeah.
It's a platform to really actually get the best out of yourself.
Do some good and pay it forward.
Yeah. So yeah. I love what I do.
So I can't place your accent. I know you're not originally Dutch. Tell me a little bit about where you're from, or as we Surinamese people say, who's your mom and who's your dad? Tell me about them.
No, my parents are my role models, and I'm Romanian as origin. I come from a family that taught me the value of integrity, that hard work pays off. But above all, they taught me to be enthusiastic.
To be positive.
To be positive.
Because did they really feel communism, your parents?
Yes, my parents felt it, but I also felt it myself.
Yeah.
I was 14. Actually, that was quite a important moment in my life. I was 14 year old when the revolution happened. Or actually, I was 13, not even 14. And I remember that vividly. But more importantly, I think I remember the life in my family before that moment in 89, and the life in my family and my life as a teenager afterwards. Actually, I've learned then that the safety in your environment comes actually from the respect you have around you, the love you have around you from the people that are dear to you. And I've also learned then that actually scarcity can have a lot of meaning.
Yeah, because it gives you a reason for being.
Yeah, it gives you a reason to be creative. It actually gives you a reason to be inventive as a family. I remember I have a little brother that he's my best friend. And together we were exploring. We were adventurous.
Did you live in a city or in a small town?
I lived in a city. City is a big word, huh? Because I when you say city, I think about the biggest cities in this world. My hometown in the western part of Romania is a town with 200,000 inhabitants. So I think that could be, it's a mid-size city or a town. It is in the western part, as I said. It has the Transylvanian feeling in a way. Yeah, that's where I'm coming from.
It's kind of exciting when you say Transylvanian, because it feels like Hollywood is recording a lot of films there nowadays because of the fact that it's so old, you know, old feeling or very traditional maybe, or maybe still old looking and the buildings and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's true. Romania is, from that perspective, a very diverse country. But it all starts with your roots. And you asked me about my mother and my father. Maybe talking about them. My mother has been an orphan very young in her life. So when she was 18, 19, I think about that age, she was orphan of both parents. And she had to work hard, study, and build a life. I think so for me those are quite humble beginnings, and my father, they've met at university, and my father was this smart boy that actually also very kind and a bit of a diplomat. If I look at the two of them, my mother is the courageous one, is the enthusiast one, the one that pushes forward.
Is she the one that encouraged you to leave for Romania?
Yeah, and she did that. And my father is more the diplomat, the kind person, and sort of the, what I called the silent love. I think I got from both of them something unique, and that helps me to be who I am today. My mother encouraged me to leave Romania, but it's also probably the biggest pain of her life, because now I'm away, and I think she longs for our family, and that's the contradiction between giving wings to fly as a parent, but also holding on to your roots in a way. So I think I've been taught to explore without giving away, without forgetting where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
I think it's important for me to, identity is important for me from that perspective.
But you were talking about life before 1989 and life after 1989. What was the biggest thing that changed for you? Was it just a sense of freedom or more positivity? What was it?
Do you really want to talk about this?
I'm curious to know.
It is on many fronts. First of all, I think it is about basic needs. I remember living in a society where spending time sorting out your basic needs took a big part of your life. I need to be more specific. I need to get courage, Nancy.
Yeah. So it's about. So your basic needs, are you talking about, like, for instance, food?
Food.
Clothes.
Electricity.
And they were more accessible afterwards.
They were more accessible afterwards. I remember studying with an oil lamp.
Yeah.
And having no electricity. So that for me, it's something that today we're talking about, actually, saving energy.
Yeah.
and potentially. Potentially being more mindful about our resources.
Yeah.
And I don't want to sound pretentious, but at that point in time, for me, it was normal to come home from school and actually make sure that I take advantage of the 1 hour of electricity to do my homework.
But listen, I was just telling our producer here about the time that I moved to the Netherlands when I was 5 years old, and we had like one place in the house that had a heater. So in the middle of the night, if you had to go to the toilet, you would freeze your ass off. But also in the morning, it took a while for the boiler to become warm before you could take a shower to go to school. So yeah, we're a little bit older. So we come from that time when there was no access, you know, and there wasn't abundance. So it feels like we were talking about scarcity earlier on. That kind of motivates you to grow, to go into new ventures and to try new things because you don't have it, right?
I think scarcity gives you motivation, brings you together. I remember with my little brother, the two of us really queuing once a year for maybe what was, for us as kids, the most important moment. There were bananas coming to town.
Wow.
Once a year. And we're queuing for a few hours in the cold temperature of December. I remember a lot of snow, not like today.
You would get bananas in December?
And we were getting bananas in December for Christmas. And I think after queuing a few hours, if we were lucky, because sometimes we were unlucky, if we're lucky, we were getting some bananas and we had to wait a couple of weeks extra to see them getting ripe, because they were really dark green. So the patience we had to experience to get those bananas, wait for them. And I have to tell you, I've never tasted a more delicious banana in my life. So since probably the year 80s, I have plenty of bananas today. I can afford plenty of bananas, but they don't taste the same. And I ask myself, why then?
Because you waited for them.
Why they don't taste the same? They don't taste the same because you take them for granted.
Yes.
And I think life tastes differently if you don't take it for granted.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about that some more, because the one thing I'm curious to know is, how did you get here? How did you get to the Netherlands?
Maybe I will respond to that, but you talked about freedom.
Yeah.
Freedom is very important for me. Freedom, you know, is physical freedom in the first place, but also freedom of identity, freedom of being able to express your opinions. Or I should say freedom for, but it also freedom to travel, which is also a limitation. And I think also the freedom to dream is important for me. Eh? So, how did I come here? How did I get here?
Maybe because the Dutch represented some kind of freedom. I don't know. People always think Amsterdam is wild.
I think for me was actually the encouragement that I got growing as an adult to learn and to explore and experience new things. I think what got me here is also ABN AMRO. ABN AMRO is a big part of my identity, of my life, of my career.
Did you used to work for them over there?
I used to work for ABN AMRO in Romania. I started for ABN AMRO in Romania in 1999. ABN AMRO gave me an opportunity to grow, to challenge myself, to make a difference. So that brought me here as well. So in 2009, when I came here, I asked the coach, he asked me actually, why do I, what's my motivation and so on. And at that point in time, I was also looking always for acronyms and my own metaphors and quotes. And at a certain point in time, I mean, I was very fond of the word dream.
Yeah.
And I was trying to link the word dream to myself. And actually, dream stands for daring Romanian exploring another meaning.
I love that.
Just to make it complicated.
Actually, you just made it easy and you made it very accessible, because it's now a personal thing. So whenever I think of dream, the Romanian part is going to be the part. So I had this guy from ABN AMRO that I talked to once. But that's nice, because you made it your own, right? It's about taking ownership of that word. And putting in your perspective. So, you know, when I talk about rule breaking, which is what we're going to talk about a little bit more, I always say that rule breaking means, how do you come to your own? How do you have the guts to really be yourself? And you just use that word to make it part of you. So welcome. Welcome here. So you are currently the member of the executive board here at ABN AMRO, which is a fancy title, but really, can you explain it to me like I'm a five-year-old, what that really means and what your biggest responsibility is?
Yeah, I will try my best. Let's see. First of all, my role should be seen in the context of the colleagues that are working at ABN AMRO. So we are 25,000 colleagues that are actually working every day to make a difference in the economy, and this is a five-year-old, huh?
Yeah.
So we're actually working every day to provide support to other people to realize their dreams.
Financial dreams, maybe?
Financial dreams. I'm not sure if financial dreams stand in isolation of bigger dreams.
Okay.
You know, probably advancing their passions, advancing their businesses. You know, working on you know, making a difference in society. So it's about really contributing to other people realizing their ambitions.
Yeah.
And my biggest responsibility probably is to give direction and to make sure that
you're about being the visionary here and having a vision of where you're going in the future.
Yeah, it's about the vision for the future. It's about the values that we want to stand for. It's about the culture we are living in when we're interacting with different people around ABN AMRO.
So it's the kind of company you want to be.
I think this is something we should all strive for. It's not about the product, or it's not about the service. It's about what you create and the emotion you leave with other people.
Yeah. So yeah. Impact as well.
Yeah, impact as well.
Yeah. So what excites you the most about what you do?
Yeah, what gives me most energy is actually interacting with my colleagues and the client, interacting with people.
Yeah.
That gives me most energy and excites me the most, because I love discovering the passions of people around me. I love supporting them. I love to learn from them. It actually gives me, I have this unique opportunity to discover every day who I am, and also discover the environment around me. That gives me energy when I'm active in discovering who I am and the environment around me.
So can you tell me something that happened over the last few weeks that you were like, that's kind of a aha moment for me. I never knew that about myself.
I think there are many moments, because it's an everyday journey. But what I realized as well is that certain people around me are better, or are helping me better in seeing my blind spots and my ego at work.
Okay.
Than other people around me. So
they're not the yay sayers. They're actually your criticasters.
Yes, and it doesn't have to feel like a critique, but it's a bit a mirror you have around you,
mm-hmm.
and
the mirror to grow. It's a chance
indeed.
To grow, an opportunity.
Indeed. And I see that. I think what I see more and more is when I am actually shown the mirror,
mm-hmm.
and that gets me reflecting. Yeah.
That's beautiful. So are you aware, as a white cis male, of your own privilege? Is that something that you're, you know, working on day to day, or is that something that you don't really think about? And I'm asking this because you're a leader, right? And we're talking about rule-breaking leaders. And it's funny that your name was mentioned so often. You know, if I would ask people here at the bank, who would you love to talk to, that your name was mentioned. So you're apparently already a leader that people think they could learn from, or they want to even connect with, that is approachable. But are you aware of your own privileges coming from where you came from?
I'm very much aware of, I'm a privileged person in all respects. And I have to remind myself sometimes that that's not the case for everyone, or that can change.
Maybe that's good to have those people around you that, you know, point out the blind spots. Like you said, you want to keep learning and growing. And they might also be aware of it, because they're not in your position. Even though they're close to you, it's like, you know, when I used to work with artists, before I was 37, I worked a lot with artists. And if you're in somebody's environment, that can kind of inspire you, but it can also be you that needs to tell them they live in a bubble and there's an outside world that they might not be completely aware of.
Yes, I think I think that it's sort of speaks to me as well, what you're saying. You trigger me with the question about being privileged or not, because my mind goes to actually a book that really shaped me in the last few years. And that's a book by Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. By the way, the title Man's Search for Meaning is also confronting, because you could probably better call it Human Search, or Human Being Search for Meaning. But what I've learned from Viktor Frankl is actually something that helps me be grounded and be humble. And that's that everything can be taken from a human being. Everything can be taken away, apart from the last of humans' freedom to choose your own way in any given circumstance. So when I'm living in a bubble,
yeah,
I'm reminding myself that that the most important thing I have is my identity. And actually, actually something that it's yours, you need to own it, you need to embrace it. And I think that also keeps you more grounded and humble towards who you are, and less, let's say, with your head in a privileged bubble.
And that's to do with authenticity, because if you're embracing your identity, like some people look at their identity and they're like, oh, we don't want that. I need to fit in. I'm at the bank now. I'm supposed to do what everybody else is doing. Let me follow the norm, rather than embracing it and leaning into it and thinking, this is me, right? I'm accepting it. That's something, don't you think that's something that we should teach more often?
Yeah, that's very important what you're saying. So I had a walk in the park with a colleague of mine. A walk in Vondelpark, a beautiful park in Amsterdam, and we talked about belonging to the environment we're working on. And so the conversation went about the team, being part of the team, and we talked about having a certain title, having a certain pay, having a certain recognition for being able to feel equal. The word equal was used. And actually my question is, what makes us equal? Is it pay? Is it title? Is it status? Or is it, I think it starts first with embracing who you are and really embracing the identity you bring to the table. I think there's a starting point. So the sense of belonging will not be compensated by a title. No. What I'm trying to say, the sense of belonging is really given by embracing your identity and being proud of who you are.
So why are equal opportunities so important to you?
Equal opportunities...
You think that might have something to do with your communistic background? Because from what I understand, for instance... In a lot of countries with a communist background, there's much more balance between women and men. So there are more women also in leadership positions because communism was about equality originally.
Yeah, yeah.
Way back.
I want to, communist is a very... probably difficult period of my life. So I want to go towards equal opportunities, and I was preparing for today and looking for inspiration. I was talking to my daughter this morning.
How old is she?
She's 15, almost 16 in a couple of weeks. Her name is Amelia. And I asked her about equal opportunities. I asked her actually about why... there is a difference in sports, for example, between female sports and men's sports. And actually asked her opinion in general about this. And she actually gave me the following answer, which I think is really the essence. She said that women and men can produce the same quality. So quality, it's all about quality. And quality doesn't have anything to do with gender or race. So her point of view is that we should all have the opportunity to show our potential. We should all have the opportunity to show our quality. And we should not be limited in that journey by our gender or race. So she really believes that men and women can have the same dreams, can deliver the same quality. So there shouldn't be a difference. At least not on the basis of gender race. Of course, she's also advocating, if I'm better dad, if I deliver better quality, I should be recognized for that.
Yeah. So what do you think your organization, you're a member of the board, what do you think you can do better when it comes to gender equality? Where's there room for improvement?
I think there's always room for improvement. My mind goes to... being even more inclusive. I think we're working hard on creating an inclusive environment.
But what does that mean?
That for me means that you create space for everyone around you, different perspectives, that you create space for different angles, different perspectives. You create space for different cultures. But it's more about giving that, creating that safety net, safety environment where people can be themselves, and as a result, the outcome is better. The outcome of a decision making, the outcome of a choice, the outcome of the direction you choose for ABN AMRO or for yourself as an individual is better. So I think we can improve maybe in giving a podium to people, giving a platform to people of different perspectives. So encouraging more the different perspectives. Sometimes you tend to be trapped in a dominant culture or dominant discussion. Eh? You can also end up in a sort of how should I call it, the mainstream. It's very it's not easy to step out of the mainstream and allow for a different stream or a different perspective. So I think that's where we can.
Okay, so when I look at gender equality, we have different ways of doing things and different perspectives. And I was watching this video the other day, and it shows a TV producer, a female TV producer, giving an example of how she would be in a meeting. Like, let's say energy prices are going up. She would probably approach it like this. Have you all seen that energy prices are going up? And then people would just ignore her. But if her male colleague would talk about that, he would do it like this. Energy prices are going up. We need to do something about that. So women are a little bit more hesitant, a little bit more, you know, it's not like your daughter said, it's not about the quality. They both notice the same thing, but one is much more determined and dominant, like you said, and the other one's much more of an idea. It's a democracy. How would you, in such a situation, encourage women, you know, to take up that space? The example she would give is that it would be great if there were more bosses that would come back to her and say, tell me more about that. You know, because they know she needs a different approach, and they would work with that approach instead of dominating their approach into, well, you should have just said it, you didn't say it, which is what a lot of women hear, that they should be saying it in a very masculine way instead of their own way. So if we're creating room for people to say it in their way and to create, you know, the space.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Can you, like, maybe give an example of how you, for instance, would do that?
I think it's about listening, and listening with the intention to be influenced. And it's sometimes, including myself, we're actually in a meeting with the inclination to listen for our opinion to be confirmed, or for a decision to be taken that is probably positive towards our goals or towards my goals. So I think it's really about training yourself to ask the right questions, ask creative questions, but really with the intention to be influenced, with the intention to discover something new. I see sometimes, actually, when I said that people show me my blind spots of my, of they show me a mirror or they talk about my, sometimes they tend to my ego. I see female leaders doing that more often than men.
They have the courage to do it more often.
They have the courage to do it more often than men. But you need to be open to it, and you need to ask for that mirror. So for me, how do I do it? I ask for that mirror intentionally.
Do you think they do it because they're much more set on the long term, the relationship that they have with you, rather than the short term results? Do you think that women are more long term focused as leaders?
I wouldn't say that. I don't think it's. I think both men and women can have a long term vision, but I think it's about. I think it's my personal opinion that women care about the heart of the organization, about the health of the organization.
Yeah.
So I think women have the tendency to care about the heart and the health, and that gives them a natural strength to care for that and to contribute to that. I think also women. This brings me to decision making. Sometimes. In my career, I was also reflecting, do I take decisions from a place of, from a rational place or from a emotional place? And I think women also bring a good balance there, by balancing the rational and the emotional. So I think it's because they have a natural strength there.
Yeah. But I love that you're saying it from the heart, because that means to me, the heart is the thing that keeps us going as human beings. That's still long term.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's
because if you look at the person in front of you and you know that you're in the people's business, then you're investing in the long term. I'm challenging you here.
No, I think we see. I was thinking about vision when you said that.
Yeah.
I think both men and women can think long term, but I agree that women tend to look at things maybe sometimes with a more structural approach to a long term and sustainable outcome. That is something more durable that is being built, and that takes care of the heart of an organization. So
yeah,
I think that.
So you got here.
Yeah.
You got more women in leadership positions. I mean, I think it's historic, right? Where the point where you're at now with the company.
I think it's also
women of color, which I love.
Yeah, I think we have been diversity and inclusion is really at the core of our identity as ABN AMRO. We are working hard to improve there, so it has different lenses. And we have been in the last few years prioritized this as not only as a sort of a casual thing, but as core to our purpose and strategy. I think diversity sits also at the heart of your purpose, banking for better for generations to come. Then you have to have the right perspectives if you have such a long-term purpose. And we have been building, I think, and creating a positive impact at the top of the organization. I have to say that there's still a lot to be done. If I look at the overall organization, we still have to improve, I think, in all the layers to create the funnel and to create room for diverse talent to grow.
Yeah, you've got to keep it filled up. You've got to keep the pipeline.
So it's not
to
a one-off exercise.
No.
But we have taken decisive steps.
But it's more in your DNA now, and a lot of organizations are looking at you and thinking, okay, we need to get there where ABN AMRO is. You're kind of in a role model position right now, because I've been asked those kind of questions as well. How do they do that? How do they get there? What can we learn from them? But as a leader, my question to you would be, how can we get more men involved in this conversation? So how can we get more men to be allies towards this whole diversity and equal opportunity and more female leaders conversation that you've already had here at ABN AMRO? So you've had to deal with male leaders that you had to open their eyes and let them see their blind spots.
Yeah, I think, first of all, we are investing now, and we just launched also the beginning of October and company-wide awareness and training on unconscious bias.
So that's a good one.
Really working on the unconscious bias in the organization, and that can sit with men and women and different cultures. So I think that practicing that muscle, that's important. I think is also actually it's about showing appreciation for the courage some leaders take to give space to diversity. So recognizing that, appreciating that, we've made it part of our goals.
And instead of punishing people, you're actually praising them.
You need to praise the good examples and give them a platform. And I think you see it in results, and you need to acknowledge that. So really
like financial results.
Financial results. And I have a team. My own direct team is probably now 50% women, and we have different cultures as well in the team. And you see that there is a very vibrant dialogue, and different perspectives are brought to the table, and that helps us as a team actually to create a healthy and productive direction.
So it's very admirable that you've got 50% women there. I was talking to somebody about creating safe space for women to really show themselves and show their authentic selves. And safe space is not just physical, you know, it's also psychological, that you feel like you can completely be yourself. Is there anything that you don't dare to share about yourself in the workplace that you feel that's not safe enough?
I like to say that I'm showing myself in the workplace as I am, as much as I'm trying to show myself as I am, with my own doubts, with my own beliefs, talking about my doubts when I have doubts. And I think that's also the example, the role modeling you need to show to encourage other men as well.
That's true. So if you're doing it, then you're saying to the rest, do it as well.
Yeah, you lower the bar for people to actually...
Because then they can say Dan is doing it.
Sometimes be uncover yourself. Be vulnerable, in the sense that you are really bringing your true self to the table. We all have three things in common. Mm-hmm. We all have them. We love something, we lost something, or we're afraid of something or someone. So if we all that have that in common, it's good to show sometimes all aspects of our identity.
Is that the new kind of leadership? Because I love the fact that you said it's also about role modeling. Like the other day, I read this article where I think it was somebody from Meta who said that she was encouraging, it was Nicola Mendelssohn actually, and she was encouraging the men in her company to take paternity leave. And they were like, oh, we don't really need it. But she said, if you do it, so the leaders in her company at Meta, if you do it, then you're creating safe space for other men to follow. Because then they're like, hey, you know, if Dan's taking paternity leave, then we can do it too. That kind of role modeling.
That counts as well. I think it. You don't have a single silver bullet. So I think you need to find, deploy all the tools you have and all the... it's an entire spectrum of behaviors that you need to put in motion, I think. But I think it's also for me... I remember in my career, sometimes I was confronted with female colleagues or leaders coming to me, and in a way, I felt that they felt uncomfortable to take a new job because of upcoming maternity leave, for example. Mm-hmm. That was really confronting, because I think that should not be a consideration when you take a new role or which you pursue your dream and your career.
Because it wouldn't be for a man.
Yeah, it wouldn't be for a man. So you should actually, we should not even take that into the equation. So I think you just need to pursue your dreams, your career, your potential, who you are, and not limit yourself. So I think that's one example that. We do not ask a man when he takes a new job if he plans to take a sabbatical,
no.
Or when he if he takes to spend time with his parents, or so why would we ask a woman about the choices she makes? So I think we need to focus then on giving or unlocking giving equal opportunities again.
Yeah. So you're at that 50-50 stage now. If there were three tips or three lessons that you could share with other men of how you got there, what would those be?
I think it's... now, on one hand, I...
We've got Anne in the building, and she's listening very carefully now, like you were leaning in to his answer.
I think it requires, number one, it is not... something that comes naturally on your plate. You need to search for it. You need to really want to create a diverse team. So it is about not only about an intention, it's about action. Number two, I think it's having the courage sometimes to promote female leaders.
What do you mean courage?
Having the courage, sometimes we say, I hear us saying, you know, she's maybe too young, or she needs to first build more experience. And I don't see us saying that many times to a man, something like that about men. So I think it's really taking the step to really, and showing the courage to put something, to believe in someone and give someone the podium and the opportunity to show her potential.
What about just
I always call it, you sometimes, when you collect the apple from the tree, maybe this is my analogy with the green banana, is sometimes is you need to collect the apple a bit green from the tree to realize the right potential.
But you're also mentioning it this, and I'm thinking it's also about working on your own unconscious bias. Like you said, you would never say that about a man, like he's too young or...
Yeah, so I think it's a bias we have. Huh? Yeah. We because probably we as men, if we look at other men, we see, normally you look at yourself in other people as well. So you tend to...
Recognize
yourself. So you would give yourself the benefit of the doubt as a man.
Yeah.
And I think you need to, you need to be courageous to
act upon it then.
Act upon it also to create a more diverse talent bench. And that's gender, but that's also cultural or different perspectives, you know, diversity in a broader sense. And probably the third element is to really make it really part of an honest dialogue with female leaders as well. Engaging with female leaders about what's important for them.
Like, what are you missing?
Do you feel you belong? Why don't you feel you belong? How can I support you in your development?
How can I make it easier for you?
Those
kind of
questions.
Support
sounds like it. Yeah, and now that you're saying, how can I make it easier?
I don't think
women are helpless. I think women are very strong.
Yeah.
It's about that environment that gives them that equal opportunity.
Yeah. It's about creating that environment that they can thrive in by being themselves. Because the questions that you are asking, I think they're really valid questions, you know, but we need to figure out what kind of questions also to ask, because they're not the same questions that you might ask a man. And it's the interest that you were showing in the beginning, that you're saying you've got to talk to the women, that first interest, that you're really interested in making that connection, that really is very valuable.
Yeah. I encourage my female colleagues to raise their voice. And raising your voice is not about being dominant, it's about sharing your aspiration. Is about making the environment around you know that you stand up for something, really, really claiming the stage. And I know it's not always you need to have a friendly environment around you, but I think it's also about limiting beliefs a bit. When we look around, I see sometimes female leaders looking at the white men around and actually already thinking, you know, do I belong here or not? Huh? Can I be part of this? And I think that's a limiting belief. I think women belong to the table, belong to the environment, and I think it's also about putting aside those limiting beliefs.
Yeah. So how do you encourage your women to do that? Is it through conversations? Do you make them aware of their limiting beliefs?
Yes.
You tell them, like, okay, I think this is a limiting belief that you've got.
Yes, I talk to them about what drives them, the values they are pursuing, why do they think that they experience a certain situation a certain way. When do they feel they belong and when not? And then I think in that way we are getting to the essence of it, belonging or not to a place and feeling having impact or not.
Yeah.
So I think it's part of my engagement with them. But it requires, I think you came back with the question and what I would advise my male colleagues. It's about engaging. And again, we talk about male and female. But I think it's engaging with people in general around you to understand what drives them and creating a diverse environment for everyone.
Yeah. Before I ask you my final questions, I have one question because of the limiting belief thing that you just said. Some top women that I speak to have a problem with being seen as dominant and assertive. And they kind of feel they have to make themselves smaller sometimes to be heard by men because they don't want to, you know, intimidate men in that kind of way. So they kind of change themselves because they feel that that's the only way for them to be effective. What would you advise them? So they're afraid of being seen as too dominant by men.
Look, I will think about, I'm also intimidated sometimes by men, by the way. So
by men, yeah.
By men.
Yeah.
So
we all are,
We all are. So but I...
Maybe remind them
so,
of that.
So it's actually about being open about your own position.
Yeah.
I am dominant at times myself, and I'm intimidated at times myself as a leader. So I'm both dominant and intimidated. It's about being aware when I experience what feeling with myself. So it's also a bit about practicing. So my encouragement to women would be to really calling it out. Now I'm going to be dominant because I want to make this point or because I want to trigger this discussion.
So you just name it.
And now I'm silent.
Yeah.
Because I think I can contribute better like that. So it's really about naming it and it's about making it transparent.
I love that you're saying that. I was asked by a company to kind of give them feedback. And the first thing that I did is I said, I'm going to give you feedback and you won't like it. And that kind of relaxed them already because they were like, okay, we're not going to like it. But I think you need it to grow.
Yeah. So I think you need... As a leader, I think my biggest role as a leader is to observe the colleagues around me, to see their potential, and to create a platform for that to come out. And that potential sometimes takes the form of a dominant profile. That potential sometimes takes form of a very silent and introvert profile. That potential sometimes is in a female, sometimes in a man, sometimes somebody of different culture. I think really leadership is about unlocking the right dose of diversity to get the best outcome from a team. So it's really, but I think the feminine part of a team is really tending to that heart and to that health of the organization. So when I talked about, I have to say that I'm asking more feedback from my female colleagues than from my men colleagues.
That's another courage thing.
Yeah, so I realize I'm asking more feedback from my female colleagues than my men colleagues. And maybe that's because I think they are giving me an honest mirror.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that men wouldn't give me an honest mirror. But I think I'm looking for that something different. And I think female leaders give me something different in my conversations with my colleagues in my team.
Love that. So Dan, the final question. This is what I teach most women to think about. What do you want to be known for? What do you want people to say when they hear your name?
I started with that word dream.
Yeah.
And because it starts with a dream. And that's daring, Romanian, exploring another meaning. So that's what I would like people to remember about me. And I think to all my female colleagues, this is really for me a nudge for them to really pursue their dreams and do not feel. Search for the coalition of the willing, and I'm part of the coalition of the willing.
Wow. Let's look for that in every single workplace, the coalition of willing. Find those people who believe the same. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for this conversation, Dan Dorner, the dreamer.